Hello there. You're listening to the Black Country Talking News. I hope you're keeping well. This week's edition is for the 8th of September 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by sightloss charity Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. Reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Liz, Helen, Ed, Tanya, Ian, Anna, Simon, Angela, Christine, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, tips on how to overcome sleeplessness, the weather, information about research into problems young people with visual impairments face with work and education, our regular Sounds of Nature spot, and rounding all that off, we get to hear Graham Fisher's In My Opinion. Up first, however, we have our Guess the Sound quiz. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you've got to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. Now we head over to our first block of local news, brought to us by Ian, Angela, Ed, Christine, and first up, it's Liz.
Angry residents have accused Dudley Council of failing them over crucial plans which could see thousands of homes built on Greenbelt land. The controversial Black Country plan, which will see more than 75,000 homes built across the region by 2039, was discussed at great length at a future council scrutiny committee meeting last week. And Andrea Smith from Wall Heath, which has two large sites earmarked for housing, said people in the town didn't understand what the Black Country plan even was, and called for a plain English approach to the consultation. Opposition Labour councillors also said the documents were riddled with errors, while the website was difficult to navigate. In total, Dudley's contribution to the draft Black Country plan is to build 13,235 homes and 22 hectares of employment land by 2039. Andrea Smith said, "Consultation is any activity that gives local people a voice and an opportunity to influence important decisions. I think Dudley Council is failing in that. I'm sure if you spoke to loads of people on the street, they would not understand what the Black Country Plan is. As an authority, I feel you have an entitlement to put it into plain English terms. We talk about plain English, but that is not being projected by Dudley Council. Residents have not been written to saying where the actual sites are. I registered to find out about it and have not received anything from the council. Quite a few residents on my estate have done the same." Helen Martin, Dudley Council's Director of Regeneration and Enterprise, said the consultation process was tightly set out in law, which they had to follow. She added, "Above and beyond that, we've done a slightly longer consultation period, 2 weeks longer than we are obliged to do, and are trying to do a range of events to reach out to as many people as possible."
A family has received a substantial payout from a care home following the failings in the care of a 94-year-old great-grandmother, which led to her death. Irene Garbett's family said Bentley Court Care Home in Wolverhampton allowed the mother of two to develop pressure sores to the extent that one became septic and untreatable. Mrs. Garbutt died in March 2019, with an inquest listing her primary cause of death as septicemia caused by an infected pressure sore. The home on Nordley Road, Wensfield, has now made a substantial out-of-court settlement to her family after admitting a series of failings in relation to her treatment in the months leading up to her death. Granddaughter Helen, a coronary care nurse, said Mrs. Garbutt's treatment during the last few months of her life had been awful. Mrs. Garbutt, who also had four grandchildren and three great-grandchildren, spent most of her life in Bilston, where she used to work in a fruit shop, and was described as a bubbly, happy woman who would help anyone. The home is currently rated as requires improvement by the Care Quality Commission. It was given the worst rating of inadequate and placed into special measures a month before Mrs. Garbutt's death. It was taken over by new owners in July.
The Black Country Councils will share a slice of a £90,000 fund set up to tackle family conflicts and improve children's life chances. Walsall, Dudley, Sandwell and Wolverhampton authorities will receive £90,500 to support parents facing continued conflict in their relationships and prevent lasting impact on their children from the National Reducing Parental Conflict Programme. The money has come from a £4 million government funding pot set up to help 147 councils in England to develop strategies for struggling families. The initiative is designed to tackle the knock-on impact of parental conflict on children's learning, relationships and future work life. It will be used in a variety of ways, from helping couples with counselling to specialist learning aids, including videos and dedicated online advice aimed to help parents learn how to recognise, de-escalate and solve conflicts. In Walsall, Dudley, Sandwell and Wolverhampton, the councils will work together to kick-start training for staff working with families so they can support separated or divorced parents to improve relationships. The government said that rows about contact arrangements, among other disputes, can often leave children feeling upset, worried and anxious, and that parents were not always aware of the impact on children. Early help practitioners will be trained to deliver specialist support to family workers. Department for Work and Pensions Lord Minister Baroness Stedman Scott said, "Family dynamics are complicated, and the pandemic will have tested the strongest of couples. That's why looking after the mental health of the whole family is vital to giving children the best start in life. And I want to ensure that help is available here. This money means better support for more families to help ensure prolonged conflict doesn't negatively impact children or their future."
Almost 1,500 care home workers in the Black Country and Staffordshire are yet to receive their COVID-19 vaccine as fears mount over a national staffing shortage. NHS figures show a total of 1,499 eligible staff, including agency workers, at older adult care homes had not received a first dose by August 22nd, a number that represents around 8% of the total workforce. In Wolverhampton, 254 out of 2,321 eligible staff, including agency workers, at older adult care homes had not received a first dose by August 22nd. In Dudley, this number was 238 out of 2,459. In Walsall, it was 120 out of 1,801, and in Sandwell, it was 231 out of 2,225. Staff are required to be double jabbed by November the 11th after MPs approved the government's plans in July. It has prompted fears over a national staffing shortage, with care homes potentially being forced to sack staff if they don't meet the government requirement. But others have urged those in the sector to do their bit and get jabbed to protect the most vulnerable. Sue Gallagher, General Manager of Sunrise of Tettenhall Care Home, said, "Throughout the pandemic, care home teams have worked heroically to protect residents from COVID-19. Now, as we look ahead, vaccinations against this dangerous virus are playing a pivotal role in our journey back to normality. As a care home worker, receiving the COVID-19 vaccination is a statement of care for those we seek to look after, And at Sunrise of Tettenhall, we're proud of our team members who have received the vaccination with enthusiasm and look forward to enjoying the key protections these vital jabs offer.
Firefighters in West Midlands were called to more incidents involving stuck objects and stranded animals last year, despite an overall fall in call-outs amid the coronavirus pandemic, figures show. Home Office data shows 598 such calls were made to the West Midlands Fire Service in the year to March, 100 more than the year before. They included 167 calls to help animals who found themselves in trouble and 431 call-outs to remove objects from people. The most common reason was to help a trapped pet, which was quoted in a fifth of incidents attended nationally, closely followed by rescuing pets from a height. Animal charity the RSPCA said its staff rescues tens of thousands of stuck or trapped animals every year. Steve Bennett, Deputy Chief Inspectorate Officer, said, "While our staff are trained and equipped to help a lot of them out of trouble, there may be some situations where they need a helping hand to ensure both the rescuers and the animals remain safe. We can request the assistance of the Fire and Rescue Service just like any member of the public can do. And we're incredibly grateful to crews across England and Wales who are animal lovers just like us and will always lend a hand to help an animal in need if they're available." The number of people requiring help with stuck objects also increased nationally from 5,311 to 5,632. Two-thirds of incidents saw someone needing help removing a ring, while trapped limbs accounted for 16% of calls. Overall, West Midlands firefighters attended 25,280 incidents in 2020-2021, including 9,598 fires, down from 25,944 the year before. They included 6,566 non-fire-related incidents, which may be related to flooding, assisting people in lifts and road traffic accidents.
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from Beacon, back with another update. This week, we're starting with news of some incredible fundraising in aid of people with sight loss. Now, our supporters do some amazing things in aid of visually impaired people, but we've been blown away by what Rob Arnold is attempting this week. He's currently taking on the world's toughest mountain race. Over 6 days, he'll be covering 380 kilometres. That works out at 1.5 marathons a day. And the route through Wales also sees participants climb a total of 17,400 metres, almost twice the height of Everest. Wow. Well, we wish Rob, who works with the Beacon team to support our members to improve their mobility post-COVID-19, the best of luck during what's sure to be a challenging few days. We so appreciate his amazing support. And if you want to sponsor Rob, who's also raising money for two other fantastic charities, you can do so by heading to www.uk.virginmoneygiving.com/RobArnoldDBR. That's www.uk.virginmoneygiving.com/RobArnoldDBR. And if you'd like to find out whether Rob or the rest of the Beacon team can help you get active again, why not give us a call? Just ring us on 01902 880 111 to find out more. Next up, there's been a special birthday this week. Yep, we're talking about you, eBay. The selling site which changed online shopping forever was founded 26 years ago. Wow. If you'd like to celebrate, why not head to our eBay shop and get yourself a Beacon bargain? Shop now. Just head to www.ebay.co.uk/USR/Beacon Charity Shop. That's www.ebay.co.uk/USR/Beacon Charity Shop. On the subject of selling sites, we've got a new product in our Etsy shop. Our Fab Lab has created some beautiful handmade wooden maps that can be personalised with your special destination. At just £15 with free delivery, it's a gift that will keep on giving, with funds raised supporting people with sight loss. Shop now via our Etsy page, Made by Fab Lab, that's all one word, or you can email us on fablab@beaconvision.org to find out more. Don't forget, our FabLab training programme can also help you learn new skills if you're living with sight loss. If you'd like to find out more, give us a ring. It's 01902 880 111. Last up this week, it may have been sweater weather for a while now, but it is indeed now officially autumn. The season of cosy nights, pumpkins and hot chocolate. Oh, it's one of my favourite times of year. Our sight loss tip this week is to make sure your home is well lit during the colder months with consistent lighting throughout so that there's no dark spots and no need for your eyes to have to adjust to different light levels. For more sight loss advice, call our sight loss advisors on, you know the number, 01902 880 111. That's it for this week. I'll be back to catch up with you all again soon.
Thank you for the update, Helen. Now we have some more local news. And starting us off, we go over to Christine.
A Black Country NHS Trust will be sentenced in November over safety failings in the cases of two patients who died. Dudley Group NHS Trust pleaded guilty to failings posing a significant risk of avoidable harm in July relating to the deaths of mother of six Natalie Billingham from Tipton and teenager Casey Jane Robinson from Netherton. A short hearing was held at Dudley Magistrates Court on Friday, where sentencing was fixed for November 18th. The court was told the hearing is likely to last 2 days. The proceedings followed an investigation by the Care Quality Commission into the care provided by the Trust before their deaths. The charges admitted by the Trust stated that it had failed to provide treatment in a safe way at Russell's Hall Hospital, resulting in harm in February and March 2018. The Dudley Group's lawyer, Paul Spencer, previously said the organisation's guilty plea in respect of Ms. Billingham, 33, was being entered on the basis that it did not accept its failings led to her death. But Mr. Spencer added that the Trust did accept that the poor care and treatment of 14-year-old Casey Jane had caused her death. Both patients had been treated for sepsis. District Judge Graham Wilkinson said the sooner the Trust is sentenced, the better for families trapped in this cycle.
A Wolverhampton private hire driver who overcharged a customer while taking her on an uninsured journey that wasn't pre-booked has had her licence revoked. Magistrates dismissed Sharish Rayat Ayyub's appeal against Wolverhampton Council's decision to revoke her private hire driver licence. On April the 29th, 2020, council officers received a complaint that Ayyub, aged 25, had picked up a passenger who had not pre-booked, which is a requirement of both her private hire licence and car insurance policy. She then more than doubled the price for the uninsured journey. The customer was charged £15 for a trip to Russell's Hall Hospital from her home in Dudley, which is typically priced at £7. When questioned by council officers, Ayyub of Broadway in Shirley, Solihull, said the increased cost was a result of coronavirus. The customer had been provided with a business card containing Ayyub's personal phone number, and she told him she had set up her own business. The court heard that Ayyub frequently carried the passenger without their journeys being pre-booked through a licensed private hire vehicle operator, which is illegal and contrary to Section 45 of the Town Police Clauses Act 1847. Councillor Philip Page, chairman of the council's regulatory committee, said, "We take public safety very seriously at Wolverhampton, placing members of the public at unnecessary risk by taking a booking without valid insurance is unacceptable. Wolverhampton Council currently operates a Get Home Safe campaign, which seeks to make sure the public are aware of the differences between hiring hackney carriages and private hire vehicles. The campaign also highlights the risks involved in taking an unlicensed vehicle and how to identify a legitimate taxi or private hire driver."
The Graham Hughes stand at Molyneux will continue to be closed for a number of games, Wolves have confirmed. Following a routine inspection in July, subsequent surveys have found severe structural deficiencies which mean the stand must be rebuilt for supporter safety. The club has been working with specialists Arena, who installed the temporary seating in 2018. Arena has been working with Wolves for many years and carry out regular inspections on the Graham Hughes stand to provide reports and certification of it being safe for use, including ahead of the final match of the 2020-21 season against Manchester United, said a spokesman. After the season had concluded, we performed a routine inspection of the Graham Hughes stand that flagged a point of structural concern requiring further inspection. Specialist structural teams were brought in to investigate further, and these surveys uncovered severe structural deficiencies to the pre-existing substructure, which was underneath the equipment we supplied in 2018. This identified the need to replace rather than repair the whole support structure for the grandstand to make it safe for fans. Upon receiving this news in July, the club commissioned a complete overhaul to the stand to ensure that the entire structure remains safe and compliant for the foreseeable future. The design process was extended to accommodate the extended scope of work, and this design procurement period is now close to completion. Unfortunately, the availability of materials due to combined Brexit and COVID-19 influences has further extended the delivery program. We are fully committed to supporting Wolves to complete this installation as quickly as possible to get fans back in the grandstand.
Plans to transform an apartment building into a 13-bed HMO have been opposed by police over fears it could lead to a surge in crime. Dudley Council is examining proposals to convert the building at 128 Himley Road, which is currently split into five flats. Under new plans, the site, which is near to the Hilly House pub, will become a HMO with 13 beds. However, the scheme, which includes the conversion of a rear garage into a flat, has been opposed by West Midlands Police. In a formal response to the proposed development, the force says it would be likely to result in increased antisocial behaviour, vehicle theft and burglary in an area which is already suffering from high crime levels. The report says the site, which is in St James's Ward, falls in an impact area, meaning it has been identified as one of high harm, high crime and high police demand. Officer Robert Manson from the Force Crime Reduction Unit said 9 of the parking spaces around the site had no natural surveillance. He said this meant there would be an increase in vehicle crime in a ward that was already fourth worst in the borough for that type of crime. The report says the plans feature no mention of any security, such as CCTV, lighting or access controls. It adds that there is no management plan detailing whether refugees or students will be staying at the HMO or whether it will be used as a bail hostel. Officer Manson concluded, "If this HMO was to go ahead, this will see an increase in fear of crime and an increase in vehicle crime, burglary and antisocial behaviour."
A woman mourning the loss of her mother had no idea she was so dangerously ill until she was diagnosed with a life-threatening condition. Laura McLaughlin from Ford Houses in Wolverhampton was convinced she was suffering from symptoms of grief instead of from leukaemia. The 39-year-old had lost her mother 6 months before, experiencing pain in her left side, weight loss and bruising, which she put down to the loss. The mother of two, who was diagnosed in 2019, said, "I had no idea I was so dangerously ill, and the pain in my left side turned out to be from my spleen, which was clogged with abnormal blood cells due to the leukemia. I tried not to Google my symptoms, but that was impossible. I knew I had so many symptoms of leukemia, but I tried to convince myself it was something like IBS and all would be okay." The 6 most common symptoms of leukemia include fatigue, bruising and bleeding, fever and night sweats, repeated infections, bone and joint pain, and feeling weak or breathless. Due to the non-specific nature of these symptoms, they're often mistaken for something more benign, with the doctor suspected the pain in Laura's side was from a kidney infection, and Laura attributed her bruises to clumsiness. This confusion leads patients to receive late diagnoses, which generally impacts their chance of survival. Laura was finally diagnosed with chronic myeloid leukemia on September 4, 2019, which also happens to be World Leukemia Day. And speed is of the essence when it comes to treatment, so blood cancer charity Leukemia Care are on a mission to raise awareness of the symptoms of the illness with their Spot Leukemia campaign this month. The mother of two said, "The Spot Leukemia campaign is hugely important. Maybe if I'd seen more about the symptoms in the media and online, I would have gone to my GP much sooner."
Now we hand over to Mina, who, as always, has the quiz questions for us.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. What foodstuff is said to never spoil? Question 2. How much honey can a single beehive make per year? Question 3. Where in the world would you see bee beard competitions? Question 4. Why can honey be useful in medicine? Question 5. How long ago did flowering pods first appear on Earth? And finally, question 6. How many species of bees are there in the world? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck.
Thank you for those quiz questions, Mina. Now we have another block of local news. And starting us first, it's Angela.
Work to transform the rest of the former Sunbeam factory in Wolverhampton into flats could restart after the building was bought for £7.5 million. The site where the famous motorcycles were made is situated just off the Penrose Island and has already been partially converted into apartments. But the future of the landmark was plunged into doubt 3 years ago, with the project grinding to a halt when developers QED went into administration. It left only 35 out of 117 flats completed, and the administrators teaming up with commercial property experts in 2019 in a bid to help find a new developer. And now work could potentially resume on the site after it was snapped up by city-based social and public sector housing specialist Paragon Living Space. The organisation said it was now looking to reassess the planning application, which had been approved, with Wolverhampton Council to ensure it is viable. Robbie Hubble from Paragon said, "We're excited that we've been able to purchase this site, which is iconic and has been stalled for so long. There are already some great properties completed in the site, and we're looking forward to updating the plans and creating a real community for the area."
An historic glass cone, one of just a handful left in the country, has been given special recognition by Visit England. The Red House glass cone, run by Dudley Council, received the accolade after a rating from the Tourist Board. The Wordsley venue raised its overall score from 85% in 2019 to 89%, 1% off a coveted gold status. The assessor from Visit England said the attraction provides a most interesting and enjoyable experience for visitors. They also praised the gift shop, signage, interpretation panels, and the overall appearance of the site. Councillor Simon Phipps, Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Enterprise from Dudley Council, said, "We believe the Red House glass cone is one of the jewels in our borough's crown, and we are incredibly proud of the visitor experience it offers, connecting local people to the area's renowned glass-making heritage. We think we narrowly missed out on gold, as the cone itself is closed at the moment for maintenance, which means we're unable to offer glass-blowing demonstrations. Although people are not able to enjoy the full experience right now, there are many elements to still enjoy, which the judges recognised. We're striving for gold, though, and hope to achieve the status when we have our next assessment. It is hoped the attraction will receive the highest accolade when the Grade 2 listed cone and hot glass studio will have reopened after maintenance, with the kiln being rebuilt to become more environmentally friendly. The Red House glass cone is open to visitors Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. The site has free parking and will be holding a festival event on September the 18th with live music and an outdoor bar.
Dilapidated sports ground facilities in Wolverhampton look set to be demolished amid calls to reopen playing fields for the public. Wolverhampton Council has submitted a planning application to take down the clubhouse, changing rooms and pavilion at Wolverhampton United Sports Ground on Prestwood Road West. The authority said the buildings were in a poor condition and were beyond economic repair. A spokesman added, the facility is being marketed as playing fields with a number of parties expressing an interest. Wolverhampton North East MP Jane Stevenson said it was vitally important the ground was reopened for the benefit of residents' physical and mental health. The ground was previously leased to Wolverhampton United until the club folded, and a council spokesman said it has been vacant since July 2019. He said the buildings are in very poor condition, no longer fit for purpose and beyond economical repair. The proposal to demolish has been put forward following extensive public consultation. The property is being marketed for retention as a playing field. There is a possibility that on-site built facilities could be created during the lease term. At this stage, it is too early to say. Planned new facilities will not be confirmed until conclusion of marketing and selection of a tenant. Ms. Stevenson said, along with many residents in the area, I have been urging the council to press on with reopening the sports ground. I am pleased that the council put the lease out to tender. However, I had hoped that they would have made more progress by now so that the local community can benefit from this facility.
A council boss has hailed a bright new future for Briley Hill after meeting with the new owners of the Merryhill Shopping Centre. Councillor Patrick Harley said the future looks very positive for the town following talks with Elandi on a walkabout of the area. The Dudley Council leader met with the business leaders alongside regeneration officers from the authority and community leaders. Councillor Harley said, we are delighted to welcome Elandi to the borough, one of many good news stories that signal a bright new future for Briley Hill. Like many retail sites, Merryhill has been hit hard by the pandemic, but we will do all we can as a local authority to support them. Add to that the millions of pounds pouring in as part of the Future High Streets Fund, and the future looks very positive for Briley Hill. The top politician got to speak to bosses about their plans for the leisure and retail complex, pledged support from the council and looked at potential links from the High Street to Merryhill, following plans by Elandi for £50 million to be spent on the shopping centre. Councillor Harley also highlighted the £10 million Future High Streets grant from the government as a catalyst for regeneration in the town, which was announced earlier this year. The leader was joined by officers from the council along with business bosses and community leaders in Briley Hill to talk about plans for the area and how they could work together to improve things. Mark Robinson, founder of Elandi and chairman of the government's High Street Task Force, added, there are a lot of exciting opportunities in Briley Hill and I'm really encouraged by the vision and the enthusiasm of the council and the community. We have to look at every opportunity we can to work together and bring about improvements to the whole of Briley Hill.
A new Starbucks drive-thru and cafe has opened at Merryhill, creating 20 new jobs. The coffee shop opened on a site off Pedmore Road in Central Way on Thursday, with the first 100 customers receiving gift bags. Every 50th customer served on opening day received a hamper full of Starbucks goodies. Snow White was also there, supported by local theatre group Once Upon a Time UK. The Starbucks Merryhill team will be accepting school uniform donations throughout September, which will then be distributed to several schools in the area. Jonathan Poole, centre manager at Merryhill, said, we are thrilled to welcome Starbucks drive-thru concept at Merryhill. Following an influx of more than 10 new stores opening in 2021, the arrival of Starbucks' latest drive-thru underpins our performance and resilience this year as we continue to invest in the centre and attract the very best brands for our visitors to enjoy. Looking ahead, we will be sharing even more exciting news with our visitors soon. And with the multi-million pound investment transformation of the centre exterior due to be completed soon, the future continues to look bright for Merryhill. Mark Gould, Merryhill store manager, added, we are excited to open our new store in Merryhill and become part of the local community. The team are very closely following the latest guidance from both the government and health authorities to keep everyone safe. The new drive-through will be open daily from 6 a.m. until 10 p.m.
As schools and colleges prepare for the new academic year, an 11-year study recommends 3 top tips to help visually impaired young people make the most of education and employment opportunities. With news on this, we head over to Anna.
Hello, this is Anna. The government have been challenged to do more to improve education and employment chances for visually impaired people after a new report set out problems in gaining access to work and training opportunities. The report shows that 1 in 3 visually impaired people fail to gain quality employment despite having qualifications in line with the rest of the population. These findings come from a study that tracked 82 visually impaired people across England, following them for 11 years, from the age of 14 to the age of 25. The aim of the study was to gain a better understanding of why visually impaired people are at a greater risk of not finding education, employment, or training opportunities. The study was carried out by the Vision Impairment Centre for Teaching and Research at the University of Birmingham, with funding from the Thomas Pocklington Trust, RNIB and Nuffield Foundation. Many of the young people involved in the study spoke positively about their experiences in school and achieved average or above average GCSE qualifications. However, they then faced barriers that made it difficult for them to move on. There were problems in higher education when many young people found adjustments were not put in place in time and they had a lack of access to specialist support. There were problems too with accessing higher education. For example, an inaccessible application process for university clearing and the Disabled Students Allowance, DSA. Problems were also found with the accessibility of virtual learning and institutions that failed to make reasonable adjustments. This led to some of the study's students withdrawing from courses, repeating modules, or entire academic years, or leaving with a degree classification which they didn't feel reflected their ability. Several study participants wanted to pursue apprenticeships, but were unable to identify suitable opportunities or access specialist support to help them consider the options. At the end of the 11-year study, 66% of the participants were in some form of employment, but 17% were not in education, employment, or training, including 7 young people who by the age of 25 had never experienced paid employment. A particular concern was the lack of support available to help visually impaired young people access employment, with several being actively discouraged from searching for work by the Job Centre Plus staff. On a more positive note, the report identified 3 factors that could be developed to help visually impaired people access opportunities more easily. These are developing self-advocacy skills with a good understanding of their vision impairment and the adjustments they require, building a broad range of skills for accessing information, and embedding mobility and orientation skills, including the ability skills to get around in unfamiliar environments. The Thomas Pocklington Trust have said that the report makes it clear that young visually impaired people are not getting their support at transition periods in their lives, and this can impact on their quality of education and their employment opportunities. The Trust has called on the government to make sure that genuine support for the aspirations and learning needs of visually impaired students is built into MPs' work on the Skills and Post-16 Education Bill and the current review of special education needs. If you're interested in the full report, you can find Lost in Translation, The Post-School Experiences of Young People with Vision Impairment at tnflink.uk/10m. That's tnflink.uk/10m.
Thanks, Anna. Now we have our final block of local news. And kicking it off, it's Ed.
A landmark city centre venue that has hosted bands including Kaiser Chiefs, Arctic Monkeys and Coldplay has been taken off the market after failing to reach its target price at auction. The Little Civic on North Street, Wolverhampton, was put up for sale after the building's owner moved out of the city to pursue other business interests. It went under the hammer with auctioners Bond Wolf in July with a guide price of £325,000 but was not sold. Owner Sean Westwood is now planning to keep the venue and has taken it off the market. The venue was formerly run by Wolverhampton Council and was a top indie club for years, including hundreds of bands. Documents accompanying the lot at auction described it as a prominent landmark three-storey corner property of brick construction and dating from 1874. Originally known as the Little Civic, it hosted numerous bands including the Kaiser Chiefs, Arctic Monkeys and Coldplay. More recently, it has traded as Blossoms, a popular bar and club and live music venue. It is currently configured to provide on the ground floor a main bar area with attractive bar servery, kitchen, male and female toilets and cellar slash beer chiller. On the second floor, and also having a separate entrance, are seven rooms and a separate toilet. These are currently unused, but are considered suitable for future expansion or conversion subject to any necessary planning permission. It adds that the property is currently led by way of a 10-year lease with rent of £35,000 per year.
A husband and wife duo say they are excited to be launching their first pub together in the Black Country. Stephen and Sharon Osborne have taken over the Bridge Inn in Kings Winford, which has been closed for a redevelopment. The former Banks's pub is now run by Black Country Ales, and the couple from Willenhall have been brought in to manage it. It's their first venture into the pub industry, with Stephen having previously worked in a factory and Sharon in an office. The Bridge, which will have a focus on real ales, will reopen on Thursday, and the couple, who have been married for 2 years, are looking forward to welcoming the punters through the doors. The refurb has seen the boozer fitted out with improved facilities and a larger beer garden added. Sharon said, "We have wanted to do it for years. 3 or 4 years ago, I rang Black Country Ales. They told me I needed to get a licence and get some training, so that's what I did. I did some training at the Black Country Arms in Warsaw. I'm really excited. We've got a great Facebook following and people are really excited in the area. We're a nice traditional pub, a real ale pub."
The backdrop of a landmark Black Country memorial to Sikh soldiers has been set in place. The 8-metre steel plate depicting a mountain range and strategic outposts will form part of Wolverhampton's new Sarugari Monument, which will stand on land in Well Lane in Wensfield. Black Country sculptor Luke Perry is creating the memorial, which has been commissioned by Guru Nanak Gurdwara and is the first monument in the UK specifically honouring the fallen soldiers. Members of the congregation have undertaken a £100,000 fundraising programme for the monument, with donations made by the temple and the project supported by the community. Wolverhampton Council has also contributed £35,000 towards the memorial after it agreed to transfer land to the Gurdwara on a 99-year lease. The completed sculpture will include the steel plate with commemorative wording as well as the bronze figure of a Sikh soldier. The memorial commemorates the Battle of Sarugari, a conflict which took place on September 12, 1897 and saw 21 soldiers from the 36th Sikh Regiment of the British Indian Army fight against thousands of Afghan tribesmen. Councillor Bhupinder Gakal, Cabinet Member for City Assets and Housing at Wolverhampton Council and Ward Member for Wensfield South, has worked closely with the Gurdwara to develop plans for the memorial. He said, "I am delighted to be here to see the steel plate being craned carefully into place. As the memorial progresses, it becomes easier to see what a remarkable and beautiful tribute this will be to those who fought so bravely."
Two stars of Peter Kay's sitcom Phoenix Nights will head the bill in the comedy tent at this month's Black Country Musicom. Archie Kelly, who played Kenny Sr., and Barbara Nice, who played Holy Mary, will both appear at the event on Sunday, September the 12th, in the grounds of Himley Hall. They will be joined by a number of local comedians, including Sean Percival and Nipper Thomas, while two stars of A Black Country Night Out, compare Ollie Spencer and Emma Rollison as Dolly Allen, will also appear. The comedy tent runs from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Other entertainment on the day will include live music on the main stage from tribute acts for the likes of Adele, The Killers, Bruno Mars and UB40, while there will also be a fun fair, food and drink stalls, and more. Councillor Anne Millward, the Mayor of Dudley, said, We are delighted to be welcoming two faces who will be very familiar to many from one of the most popular TV sitcoms in modern times. Archie and Barbara will be joined by local comedic talent, and with loads more going on at Himley, this year's Black Country Musicom promises to be a brilliant day out for the whole family. Get your tickets now and don't miss out on the fun. Early bird tickets cost £12 for adults and £6 for children. Prices will increase for those buying tickets on the gate.
Wolverhampton's annual LGBT plus pride event has been postponed after headline act Nadine Coyle pulled out. The popular event had been due to take place in the city this Saturday after it had to be cancelled last year as a result of the pandemic. But now it has been pushed back, although no date has been officially set, with ticket holders for the event receiving full refunds. Nadine Coyle, who was part of Girls Aloud, announced she is unable to perform due to COVID regulations, stopping her from going back and forth from Ireland, where she is filming a television show. A statement by the organisers of Wolves Pride said, "Due to headline act Nadine Coyle announcing that she is no longer able to perform, we have taken the difficult decision to postpone Wolves LGBT plus Pride 2021. We know this will be disappointing news for people who wanted to see Nadine, and ticket holders will receive full refunds. Discussions will now take place with representatives of the city's LGBT plus community with a view to organising a Pride event in the autumn that celebrates the fantastic diversity of our city."
Up next, we're our very own Flashback Roger, who's just buzzing to share with you his latest facts.
Hello everyone. I hope that you're all okay this week and have been enjoying the early autumn before we all start thinking about making and storing up our favourite jams and pickles to cheer up the winter months. In your own up, I've been buzzing round this week, finding facts for you to mull over. So here we go. Now, did you know that? Honey never spoils. When sealed in an airtight container, honey is one of the few foods known to have an eternal shelf life. There are even reports of edible honey being found in Egyptian tombs, several thousand years old. I bet they never had a sell-by date on them. A typical beehive can produce anywhere from 30 to 100 pounds of honey a year. To produce a single pound of honey, a colony of bees must collect nectar from approximately 2 million flowers and fly over 55,000 miles. This amounts to a lifetime of work for about 800 bees. It's no wonder they say we're busy as a bee. In the 1830s and possibly much earlier, some honey vendors started sporting bee beards as a way to draw attention to their product. This is done by holding a caged queen bee beneath the chin and allowing the bees to cluster across the face. Today, bee beards are more fashionable than ever. There's even a competition held in Ontario, Canada each year to create the most impressive bee beard. And honey is medicinal. Evidence of honey being prescribed as a medical treatment dates back as far as the ancient Mesopotamia. Because the substance is so inhospitable to bacteria, it was and still sometimes used as a natural bandage to protect cuts and burns from infection. Today, honey is also used as a natural treatment for dandruff, stomach ulcers, and even seasonal allergies. Bees have made honey for millions of years. Around 130 million years ago, flowering plants first appeared, and at some point after that, bees began producing honey, with one fossilised honeycomb dating from about 3 million years ago. An ancient cave painting was discovered in Valencia in Spain that depicts a human figure removing honey from a hive, and it could date back as far as 15,000 years ago. Honey's depth of flavour is determined by the source of the nectar it was made from, as is the colour too. There are 20,000 species of bees on Earth, and only a small fraction of them make honey. However, not all honey is made by bees. While bees are the most associated with honey, the Mexican honey wasp also produces honey on a large scale. So, What did you think about those few facts? That made me appreciate the work of our humble bumble anyway. Oh, by the way, and in parting, if you're a fan of Harry Potter, then Dumbledore is the old English word for bumblebee. And he rode up. I'll buzz off for now. So till next week, I'll bid you farewell. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Thank you for those fantastic facts, Roger. Up next, we now have Mina, who has for us a weather update.
The weather for this week looks to be cooler following on from the earlier mini heatwave and looks to be mixed, so a bit of everything can be expected. Temperatures are predicted to be steady throughout the week, typically hovering around 20 degrees. UV levels are expected to be low to be moderate throughout the week. For Friday 10th of September, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. On Saturday 11th of September, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. Moving on to Sunday 12th of September, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. On Monday 13th and Tuesday 14th of September, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. For Wednesday 15th of September, it's light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. And finally, on Thursday 16th of September, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Now we have our Sounds of Nature feature, which this week is an uninterrupted recording of a seacoast atmosphere recorded on Skokholm Island, Pembrokeshire. This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Now we have our sportsman Ian giving you all the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion.
Hello, I'm Ian and here's your latest football news. Albion boss Valerian Ismail has revealed Italian great Antonio Conte has helped inspire his three-at-the-back system. The Baggies have played in a 3-4-3 formation ever since Ismail was appointed head coach, with the Frenchman also successfully using the tactic at Barnsley. It's a system often used by Conte, who has won 4 Serie A titles during spells in charge of Juventus and Inter Milan. He also lifted the Premier League crown while boss of Chelsea, and Ismail revealed he has spent a lot of time studying the Italian. "I studied Conte a lot when he was at Juventus in Italy," the 45-year-old said. "Then, when he came over to Chelsea, I watched them all the time. That was back in 2013. I watched him and their games, any that I could look at with my analysts over a 3 or 4 year period. I always watched teams who played a back three as I believed it was the future and that it could solve all of our problems." In the early stages of his managerial career, Ismail took charge of Wolfsburg's second team, and he said that was another key time to shaping his philosophy. At Wolfsburg, I worked with the second team. We tried everything. We found out what works, what doesn't, he continued. In the first team, there was a big pressure to get results. So I needed the kind of place where I could work on formation and intensity. I needed that to improve. Meanwhile, goalkeeper Sam Johnstone has been linked with a summer move to Southampton. The England international sees his contract at the Hawthorns expire at the end of 2021-22. Johnstone is in talks with the Baggies hierarchy over a new deal, with the club hopeful he will stay. But according to reports, Southampton are monitoring his situation and could make a move to sign the 28-year-old if he becomes a free agent next summer. Raul Jimenez could miss Wolves' next Premier League fixture as the club faces sanctions for not allowing him to join up with the Mexico national team. After the Premier League and its clubs agreed not to send their players to red list countries for the current international break, Wolves stopped Jimenez from meeting up with Mexico for their World Cup qualifying games. Mexico's third and final game of the break comes in the early hours of September the 9th UK time, and if Jimenez travelled, he would face 10 days of isolation in a hotel on his return to England, meaning he would miss both the Watford and Brentford games on September the 11th and 18th. However, after Wolves stopped Jimenez from travelling, the club now face potential punishments from FIFA after Mexico called for them to be imposed. As a result, Wolves may be banned from fielding Jimenez for 5 days after the international window, meaning he will miss the Watford game. The club may also face fines or additional sanctions from the world governing body, who have written to Wolves outlining the regulations. The Premier League and FIFA are now working to find a solution as the league fights on behalf of Wolves and the other affected clubs. The world governing body is also hoping the UK government will relax rules for red list countries despite previously refusing to. Meanwhile, Wolves are set to offer Adama Traoré a new and improved contract in a fresh bid to seal his long-term future. The star winger has only 2 years left on his current contract after signing a 5-year deal when Wolves paid £18 million for him in 2018. Traoré has been in negotiation with the club for some time, with an offer being on the table for a year. Talks between all the relevant parties, for the most part, have continued to take place, and Traoré is now set to receive a new and improved offer as Wolves attempt to fend off interest in him. Tottenham Hotspur and former boss Nuno tried to lure Traoré to London this month and made 2 offers to sign him, both of which were well below what Wolves value him at. But with only 2 years left of his contract, Wolves may be forced to cash in on him if they cannot agree new terms. As a result, the club are aiming to reignite talks with the forward and put a new and improved offer on the table. It is understood Traoré was keen to continue his Wolves journey when talks began, but that he wanted a bigger offer. He seems to be enjoying football under new boss Bruno Lage, with the far more attacking approach getting the best out of the 25-year-old.
Now we have some tips to help you sleep better with a visual impairment. And also there's the opportunity to sign up to take part in a survey to monitor how sight loss affects sleep. With this, we head over to Tanya.
Hello, this is Tanya with a question. Do your sight difficulties sometimes make it difficult to sleep? If so, help is at hand from researchers who have pulled together tips and information from a sleep study that's focusing on the problems faced by blind and partially sighted people. The study is still ongoing, so if you are over 18 and living in the UK with sight problems, you can sign up to take part. The study is a joint project by Blind Veterans UK and researchers at Circadian Therapeutics, and I will give you details of how to sign up at the end. Sleep and biological daily rhythms, circadian rhythms, are essential to maintaining the healthy balance and functioning of the mind and body, including daytime alertness and sleep timing. Part of our brain acts as a master internal body clock and keeps our body in line with the 24-hour day. One of the main ways it does this is through light perception. During the day, when there is bright light, our brain is telling the body that it's time to be awake. Then, during the night, when it's dark, our brain tells the body that it's time to sleep. For visually impaired people, this process is often disrupted due to a reduction or total loss of light information reaching the brain through the eyes. This makes it much harder for the internal body clock to stay in line with the 24-hour day, and as a result, visually impaired people often experience sleep disruption. So what tips have the researchers compiled so far for better sleep for visually impaired people? Their advice includes the following 10 pointers. 1. Keep to a sleep schedule. Try to wake up and go to sleep at the same time every day, even at weekends, and try to set a bedtime that allows you 7 or 8 hours of sleep every night. 2. Create a sleep-friendly bedroom. Is it dark enough? Is your bed comfortable? Is it too hot? Is it too cold? Try to create the perfect environment for sleeping. 3. Limit your caffeine, alcohol, and nicotine intake in the evening. 4. Try to keep a wind-down routine. Set aside time every evening to relax and get ready for bed. 5. Try to avoid long naps during the day, as this may make it more difficult to sleep at night. If you do need to nap, try to limit it to around 20 minutes. 6. Maintain a healthy diet. Try to keep your blood sugar in check and drink plenty of water. 7. Keep active. Exercise your body and mind during the day, but avoid physical exercise close to bedtime. 8. Try to eat meals at regular times and avoid big meals within 4 hours of going to bed. If you're hungry at night, try a healthy light snack, such as a piece of fruit. 9. Avoid watching TV, eating, or studying in bed. This will help to create a strong link in your mind between bed and sleep. 10. Try following the quarter of an hour rule. If you're still awake after about 15 minutes of trying to sleep, get out of bed, go to another room, and run through your wind-down routine until you are feeling sleepy and ready to return to bed. If your vision allows you some light perception, there are additional steps you can take. For example, in the mornings, increase your exposure to daylight. Exposure to bright light for 30 to 60 minutes when you first wake up will help energize you for the day and help keep your body clock in order. And in the evenings, try to avoid bright light and limit your use of electrical devices such as smartphones and tablets, because these give off bright lights. Looking more widely, there could be also an option of taking melatonin to help you sleep. This doesn't work for everyone, so do make sure you speak to a doctor before going down this route. Melatonin is a natural hormone released by the brain during hours of darkness at night. It helps to promote sleep and to regulate the internal body clock. Dealing with fatigue during the day can also be a problem if you regularly experience disrupted sleep. If this is the case, the researchers' top 5 tips to combat fatigue are: 1. Eat often to beat tiredness and stay hydrated by drinking plenty of water. Try eating regular meals and snacks throughout the day rather than eating large meals less frequently. 2. If you're feeling exhausted, then exercise might be the last thing on your mind. However, regular exercise can make you feel more energized and can also help you to sleep better at night. Even a 15-minute walk can give you an energy boost. 3. Feeling stressed uses up a lot of energy. Try introducing relaxing activities into your day. Things like going for a walk, reading a book, and meditation can all help you relax. 4. Watch your caffeine and alcohol intake, because both can have a negative impact on your nighttime sleep, making you even sleepier during the day. 5. Rule out health problems. Fatigue is a common symptom of problems such as diabetes, heart problems, arthritis, and sleep apnea. Some medications can also cause tiredness, so check with your doctor to see if any of these could be contributing to your difficulty sleeping. And finally, a reminder that if you would like to take part in the sleep survey, you can fill in an online registration form at tnflink.uk/10N for November. That's tnflink.uk/10N.
Now, with the answers to this week's quiz, we, as always, head over to Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz.
Are you ready? Question 1. What foodstuff is said to never spoil? And the answer here is honey. Question 2. How much honey can a single beehive make per year? And the answer here is 30 to 100 pounds. Question 3. Where in the world would you see bee beard competitions? And the answer, Ontario, Canada. Question 4. Why can honey be useful in medicine? And the answer here is because it's inhospitable to bacteria. Question 5. How long ago did flowering pots first appear on Earth? And the answer, 130 million years ago. And finally, question 6. How many species of bees are there in the world? And the answer here is 20,000. How did you do? Hopefully you're buzzing with delight. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a swarm of bees. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we now head over to Graham Fisher for another edition of In My Opinion.
Hello.
In a novel twist on a hackneyed expression, vocalist Martin Fry of ABC sang on their 1982 hit, The Look of Love, "If you judge a book by the cover, then you judge the look by the lover. I hope you'll soon recover." No, me neither. But I suppose it offers an aid memoir reinforced by a catchy tune that one should not judge others by appearances. Gosh, at 15 stones in weight, bearded with long hair, earring and tattoo, and usually clad in leathers or denim, I can tell you all about that one. Yet, behind this dishevelled middle-aged monument to excess, once lay a youthful athlete of some modest ability, and I've dined out on numerous occasions by relating the absolutely true tale of my not-so-grand participation. I completed the course in an unremarkable time and was left shattered for some while afterwards. At the 1983 Heart of England Marathon around the delightful little market town of Atherstone, Warwickshire. As we jostled for space, awaiting the starter signal, I glanced at my fellow competitors, a mixed bunch if ever there was. To my right, I saw the scruffiest of urchins in threadbare attire, and a battered old pair of what we used to call tennis pumps on his feet. I watched in amazement as he took a black plastic bin liner and ripped three pieces out of it to accommodate his arms and head. Dressing himself thus, he looked, to be frank, quite ridiculous, but remained oblivious to anyone noticing. And to my left, Adidas man. Head-to-toe designer running stuff. I watched in curiosity as he lifted his wrist and adjusted what appeared to be a watch, but from which was emanating a strident beep, beep, beep. "What's that?" I inquired. "Ah," he explained enthusiastically, "set this to what pace you want to run and then just match the beeps to your rhythm. If I set it to around 7 minutes per mile to start off, then pick up the pace towards the end, I should do the course in sub-3 hours. Impressive. There is such a thing as out-psyching your fellows, and if anyone was going to do so, then here he stood. Off we went as we steadied to our own tempos. Nowadays, anyone running around the block seems to be carrying a water bottle, but back in 83, the first hydration station did not appear until 10 miles into the race. The next big hurdle to face is what runners refer to as the wall, a sudden fatigue at around 18 miles when the body has exhausted its supply of glycogen in the liver and muscles. It's a horrible feeling, alleviated greatly by those glucose tablets stashed in the back pocket. Anyway, as I hit my own wall, who should come dashing past me with a cheery hello but Binliner Man? I never saw him again. He was gone into the distance. At precisely that point, I recall coming down a long open slope where, about half a mile yonder, I could see blue flashing lights and a horizontal body being lifted onto a stretcher. By the time I'd reached the scene, the patient had been covered in one of those silver space blankets before being taken to hospital, so I could not see who it was. But I could distinctly hear a steady beep, beep, beep going, I would guess, at about 7 minutes a mile. And that, as if anyone needed a lesson, was affirmation of not to judge by appearances. So, let me fast forward almost four decades to a recent experience where my disinclination to assess by looks alone was challenged, but I am delighted to relate, was not found wanting. Allow me to paint the scene. For reasons that will become apparent when I describe him, the young man in question is considered vulnerable, so I will do nothing to identify him by name or location or the precise circumstances, but that is all of no relevance to the tale anyway, so here goes. For some considerable time, I have been associated with a facility that caters for those unfortunates who, quite simply, cannot be accommodated within the confines of contemporary mainstream education. There are those who might write them off as beyond meaningful assistance, but this is as erroneous as it is judgmental, and with careful but intensive nurturing, it is astonishing what the human spirit can overcome when played to its strengths rather than disparaged for its weaknesses. A few years back, for example, I was shown two identically shaped glass tumblers by a man supervising a young lad who had been all but abandoned by the conventional establishment and with evident difficulties sitting at a diamond cutting wheel. The one glass was etched carelessly with meaningless scratches. The other was a fine piece of hand-cut crystal that would have graced any shop. The supervisor handed them both to me, incredulous. 6 weeks from one to the other, he said in amazement. Acquiring that level of skill usually takes years. Meanwhile, back to my latest caper and a call I received from another supervisor at the same facility, inviting me to be the subject of a photo shoot for a young photographer wishing to expand his portfolio. I was introduced to a man in his 20s, ascetically thin, maybe standing less than 5.5 feet in his boots, cheek studs, tattoos aplenty, and a Mohican haircut. It transpires that he had half of his innards missing, and is fed on a liquid diet via a tube in his chest. As if that wasn't enough to spoil his day, and please don't even get me started on the existence of a munificent god who sits atop such things. He was on the upper register of the autistic scale. He was one of the most charming and affable young men I have ever met. The problems he had to face just to get through the day are simply unimaginable to the likes of most of us. But then, put a Nikon in his hands, and wow, was he in the zone. A shot here, an instruction there, a direction to change stance or shift position, he was totally gone. He completed a suite of shots, some of which made their way into my inbox shortly afterwards. I immediately took one, blew it up, and sent it to a picture framer for hanging in my office. I told his supervisor what I'd done and was informed he's dancing around the yard outside with joy. tears rolled down my cheeks for some while afterwards. Yet I go back to the young man who was first presented to me and wonder how many of us would have walked by on the other side. Perhaps, and I'm ashamed to even think so, I could have been one of them. But how, in a supposedly advanced society, do we make such discriminatory initial judgments? And, perhaps more importantly, why? It appears that genetics and heredities may play an equal role to simple prejudice and behavioural patterns. An analysis posted on her online blog by self-styled spiritual pilgrim Beth Bruno of South Carolina, USA, suggests our perceptions of others are definable by categories underpinned by, you're probably ahead of me guessing this one, social media. People are eager to give their opinions about our lives and choices, she claims. And again, by extension in my interpretation, appearances too. Sarcastic and rude comments on others' posts seems to bring a sense of satisfaction to our egos. While this may seem innocuous enough, since we can do this with a measure of anonymity, it is far from being harmless to ourselves and others, she concludes. That not only seems reasonable, it also brings nastiness and prejudice squarely into the age of cyberspace. But why are we so quick to judge? According to an article in Psychology Today of May 2018, written by one Elizabeth Dorrance Hall, PhD, our brains are attempting to make sense of why people do the things they do. We make snap judgments about people because it moves us on to the next thing our brains need to work out. In other words, it's the quickest way to answer the question, what the hell, when we see someone do something that makes no sense or evokes a visceral response of anger or aversion. Dr. Hall goes on to suggest that if we checked ourselves throughout the day to see how often we were being judgmental, we might be shocked by the degree of negative judgment on both ourselves and of others. She advises in conclusion, there is a way to flip the habit on its head, and if we are willing to change this paradigm, we might find that the world opens up for us. I fear I may be entering uncharted waters here, so to avoid any pretense of psychospeak, I'll leave the last word to that anonymous young photographer friend to whom I was delighted to offer a bit of empathy and support that took but a few minutes of a day that I might otherwise have squandered anyway. The thoughts of him dancing around the yard outside with joy are still with me. And, I have to say, I feel rather good about myself. Thus, my understanding of the practical consequences of positive changes to that paradigm, which I am happy to confirm, are singularly uplifting.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!